Let's do this. Cult of Hockey Podcast. I'm David Staples, and I'm here with Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Good day, David.
And welcome to everyone who's tuning into the podcast. We've had a pretty good response to it so far, so we're much appreciative of that.
Thanks for listening.
All righty. Troubled times in Oilerland. This is like a repeat podcast. Before we left, they had the NHLPA mandated break. They had scored one goal in three games. They're now up to two goals in four games. So this is, that was, we all were expecting after that week off that McClellan would sit there with his pen and a pad and come up with some new line combinations. So I was a little bit disappointed, bitterly disappointed, when that did not happen. And I, you know, one goal in three games. What does it take, coach, to usually you're throwing that blender out when you're behind by a goal in a period. So that was troubling. So let's go, I'm going to go through the list here of current slumps. Jordan Eberle, no points in seven games. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, no points in six games. Yeah. Leon Draisaitl, no points in four games. Connor McDavid, 2 points in five games, which is probably the most alarming slump of them all when you think about
He's been struggling.
Patty Maroon, two points in the last 10 games. Milan Lucic has not scored an even strength goal in more than 2 months. So the whole thing that McClellan was trying to do was to get McDavid and Draisaitl, who we have been told are friends, so they got to be on the same line because they're friends.
That's good that they're friends. Wayne Gretzky and Mark Messier were friends too, but they weren't always on the same line. In fact, they were almost never on the same line.
When things like that are thrown in, like just things that are just like, that is not a reason to have those guys on the same line, that they're friends.
Maybe roommates.
They want to be on the same line. Who cares? Who gives up?
Let's put Darnell Nurse on the line, too. He's a friend.
The friends line. Jennifer Aniston at center. All right. Don't use that argument if you want to have that as a line. So when people are, me mainly, have been getting frustrated with that two guys, I think they need a 1-2 punch, but other people apparently have also been getting frustrated. So Darcy McLeod, the wood guy, he made this comparison to show that McDavid and Draisaitl aren't this magical combination. So what you do is you look at their 5-on-5 play, and McDavid with Draisaitl, they're scoring 3.11 goals per 60 minutes of 5-on-5 play. That's McDavid with Draisaitl. But when they're not together, McDavid is scoring 2.94. So it's almost the same. It's a few percentage differences. There's not this huge boost for McDavid when he's been playing with Draisaitl. I think they are, actually. That's a good line. No one's denying that. But it isn't like this massive, magical boost that the friends get when they're together, you know, holding hands and frolicking on the ice together. So McDavid, another way to look at it is goals plus minus percentage. Mm-hmm. McDavid with Draisaitl, their goals plus minus is 58.1%, which is good, scoring 58% of the goals at even strength. But when he's not with Draisaitl, he's at 61.4%. He's done even better, his plus minus. So there's no overriding statistical argument to keep these guys together, Bruce.
So what Woodguy's saying here in reality is that Draisaitl really isn't all that good.
Is that what he's trying to say? Is he one of the? Is he part of the anti-Draisaitl faction?
I don't think so. I'm sure if he's listening to this podcast at whatever moment, he'll be apoplectic that I said that.
Yeah.
So
what is?
But he's good enough
now
that you've got one line that's doing some scoring, and people are saying, well, there's no secondary scoring. Well, I'd argue there's not much primary scoring when you got two freaking goals in four games. And I mean, the one line did produce both of those goals. So what does that say about the other guys on the team? Well, what you just said, no points in the last forever. So it is a bit. I mean, on the other hand, they're on a one game losing streak, right? They came back from the break having successfully Bettmaned their way through the previous game by playing a scoreless game and then winning the skills competition. So that they,
what's their, since the All-Star break though, Bruce, what's their record?
Their record is 0 regulation wins, 4 regulation losses, 1 tie that they won in the shootout.
Okay,
4 goals for, so 14 against. That's
this
bad.
Is like the Dallas Aikens Oilers right now. Okay?
4-14.
This is not working.
No.
This is not working.
No.
So, what has McClellan done in response to things? Finally, he's had enough himself. He's been reading The Cult of Hockey. He's been thinking, yeah, those guys.
New lines, new combos. He switched three guys, changed position, and all four lines change at least one player and the makeup of the line.
Okay, who's the top line?
So the top line now has McDavid, by definition, that is the top line, with Maroon on the left wing and Eberle on the right.
I really like that line. Mm-hmm. Maroon has played well all year long, and you can look at it statistically. There's evidence for this. Maroon and McDavid have played well all year together, and Maroon is the policeman on the line. I think McDavid likes to play, mm-hmm. but what he likes to play with shouldn't factor in. But I think it helps him to play with a big physical player, and Maroon can also make a play. So
you want to have balance on your line, and if Eberle is your right winger, you're going to want one grinder for sure on the troop. It could be Lucic or Maroon. And to Maroon's credit, he's played well with whatever line he's been on. He's helped the line. Like, he seems to be a very nice complementary player.
He's not quite in that, you know, the driver category, the player who, whatever line you put him on, he's going to lead that line to success. I think this year the Oilers have only two players in that category.
Right.
But he's close. He's the next best thing this year to being that player, which is this. Who would have guessed that at the start of the year? I mean, at the start of the year, a lot of people were still making the argument that Benoit Pouliot was better mm-hmm. than Patrick Maroon Bruce.
Yep.
So that was the shocking thing I heard.
Well, they're both players, and Pouliot's past history is such that whatever line he went on, the line did well. And he played well with Nugent Hopkins and Eberle. He played well with McDavid and Eberle. He played, he played up and down. This year, his whole game has fallen off a cliff. So, you know, you could look at whether you looked at his advanced stats or anything else, he's having a terrible season. Whereas Maroon has blossomed here in Edmonton and has rightfully seized the role in the top six.
Eberle on that line. What do you think, Bruce? One more chance?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess there's a lot of...
Last chance, gas.
A lot of...
no gas for 173 kilometers after this
if he
doesn't succeed.
Yeah, something like that. And there's a lot of people very unhappy with this, I understand. But Eberle is, even with his trials and tribulations and his worst season possibly of his whole career, he is the most established scorer among the listed right wingers, and it is not close.
He's not having a good year. Part of it is he's been demoted off the top power play. I personally think that he should be back there. Did you see? I understand that they were working on the power play in practice today.
They flipped flipped Sekera and Klefbom on the points.
Okay, anything else?
And otherwise the forwards were the same sets of four, I think.
I'd like to see Eberle over there on the, what is it, Bruce? Which half wall are we talking about here?
The left half wall. You'd like to see him in Letestu's spot?
Yeah, I would. It's just too predictable.
Uh-huh.
That has been a very good power play to give that group of five players credit. They have been very successful, but they seem to have hit a wall and they seem to have run out of ideas, and the other teams are onto their ideas. So I do think I like Klefbom there. He's got a hell of a point shot. I think he's a more creative player, a better mover of the puck than Sekera. And I also think they could have gone a step further and put Eberle there instead of Letestu. Although Letestu has been fine, and maybe this tweak will be enough to help out. So what's the next line, Bruce?
Okay, and line two, now we have Leon Draisaitl back in the middle, flanked by Milan Lucic and Anton Slepyshev.
I love this line, even though I'm not the biggest Slepyshev fan, because the production really isn't there. Like, in terms of creating scoring chances, getting scoring chances, shots, it hasn't been happening. Like, he's at lower levels than Pouliot mm-hmm. this year. So I know a lot of people are really excited with this player, and I know he hustles, he puck protects, he works hard.
He's up and down the wings, he takes the body.
Yeah.
Like, there's
so
a lot
there's
to
lots,
like.
There's lots to like, but I want to see some production, okay? So I'm not sold on that aspect of this. I mean, I'd rather see Jesse Puljujärvi there, frankly, and we'll get to that in a bit. But I do love Lucci. I love the idea of a grinding winger with Draisaitl. And I love Lucic, because in a five-game spell earlier this year, Lucic and Draisaitl were together, and they were fantastic together. Mm-hmm. Lucic had his best spell as an Oiler when he was with Draisaitl. They're moving at the same speed. They play the same game. They cycle the puck. They protect the puck. This line could be like a one-minute nightmare for the opposition of cycling in their end of the ice. So I love it.
Yeah, I mean, what's this? Slepyshev, the smallest guy on the line, I mean, he's what, 210 pounds or something? I mean, they're all like plus size players.
Yeah,
and, I mean, Lucic is huge, yeah. And Dreisaitl, this combination of size and skill as a centerman is top drawer. And
he's been strong defensively.
They should be able to lean on a few teams, like you say.
Who's next?
So then we have Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, third line center, according to Kelly Rudy, and now apparently according to Todd McClellan, with Drake Kajula on left wing and Zach Cassian on the right side.
McClellan's seen Nuge as the third line center much of the year, I think. Well, he's kind of seen him as a second line center, you could argue.
I would strongly argue he's been second line because of the way he's deployed that top six and his tough comp
enough.
That he's been getting. But
I don't mind this line at all, actually. I really like the way that Drake Kajula played at center. Unlike, I think I'm kind of in a minority there. I thought Kajula handled the defensive end of the ice much better than I expected, and his offense perked up. Maybe it's because he's getting healthier. Cassian has been playing, his puck protection skills have really taken a step up, and he's making better decisions in the offensive end. So those two players are trending up. Nugent Hopkins is having a terrible year. I looked at scoring chance shots. He's getting a lot of shots, Bruce, but only 20% of his shots are from the grade A scoring chance area. Compare that to someone like Dreisaitl, who's above 50%.
Yeah.
Nugent Hopkins isn't suffering from bad puck luck this year, as some people are suggesting. He is suffering from, he can't get the puck in the slot and get off a good shot. And that's partly on him, partly on his line mates, but he hasn't been doing well in that regard.
And partly on the system. You can see that line shooting the puck into the zone far more often than you would think would be their preferred method of entry. I mean, him and Eberle, for instance, they played together for many years. I've never seen them shoot the puck in so often as this year, and that's clearly a system thing.
Could be something to that. It's not working. So maybe this line will work. The number, we're going to get to this. I won't say it now. I'll just hold off on the comment I was going to make. Okay, who's the fourth line? The
fourth line is Mark Letestu, between Matt Hendricks and Benoit Pouliot.
Ooh.
You like it, eh?
I hate that line.
Do you?
I would send Pouliot to the minors.
Wow.
And I would have Anton Lander there in a second.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And here's my reasoning. At even strength, it's a bit of a saw-off at this point between those two players. Pouliot's not providing on the attack. So if he's not a step above Lander, well, Lander is a step above him as a PK guy. And I don't mind Pouliot on the PK, but Lander has been, I think, their best PK guy. And if he can save them three or four PK goals against for the rest of the year, that could be one or two wins for the Edmonton Oilers because of Lanton over Pouliot, because of special teams play. You know, that might be overestimating the effect of that one small change, but I just think their PK is fundamentally better with Lander out there, and I like him in the lineup for that reason, especially because he gets the job done as a checking forward on the fourth line. Plus, Pouliot needs to go to the minors. He needs to spend either the rest of the year there or a month there to wake the guy up.
Do you think he'd clear waivers, do you?
Well, he was the best signing, apparently, in the free agent signing in Edmonton Oilers history, so who knows?
Yeah, well, you'll notice on that list of 12 that we have not included Eero Pakarinen, who is back and close. I mean, he played a few games in the AHL.
I'd play him and Lander over Hendricks. Yeah. Hendricks is, the games passed him by. I kind of mind Matt Hendricks one out of five games or one out of three games. Now and then as the 13th forward. When everyone else is, someone's hurt and you got to play him, he can still play well enough to do that.
But. Well, right now they're down to 12, so he's listed among the 12. They also have Jujhar Kara, and I guess both of Kara and Pakarinen were subbing in and out for Letestu and Hendricks at the practice this morning, so they were cycling 14 guys.
Kara should be on this team, Bruce.
And the other guy who's not here, of course, is Anton Lander, who they sent down yesterday on his 30th day of waiver exemption. And
yeah, you dug into that. What did you find, Bruce? What's the deal there? So you thought there might be some canny GM work there.
Well, I mean, you can disagree with the premise. I mean, if you think Lander belongs on the team, then you're probably not going to like him being sent down. My take is that if you are going to send him down, you're better off to do it while you can freely do so. I think they put Anton Lander on waivers tomorrow based on his recent play that he would get claimed. They're close enough to the end of the season. It's less of a gamble for another team to pick him up. And they were literally down to the last day. He came up in January. He played 10 days here. He came back up. He played 17 days here. He came back up and he played 2 days here. It's 29 days since he cleared waivers in November. And the exemption is for a cumulative time of 30 games or 10 games. And he only played 6 games. And he was just 1 day under the limit. And I think it's just Chiarelli putting the chess piece in place. He's ready to come. I'd be shocked if we didn't see him again before the end of the season. But now, for now, Chiarelli has the option of using him on the two different teams. If he hung on to him for even 2 more days, he'd lose one of those options. So he's just playing the chess game. And he's also got, you know, he's in tight against that salary cap. Appearances to the contrary, there's big bonus money that's going to be paid out to McDavid and Draisaitl. That's going to put them mighty tight. So he's been running a shorter roster, 22 players typically. And when they have a couple days off, he cuts it down to 20 if he can.
So I think that's you're probably right in that. Maybe that was part of the thinking. Maybe they want to even help Bakersfield,
Who knows?
Although they're in tough making the playoffs, they're not doing too well. So, but I still think you keep Lander and you send Pouliot down at this point. All right, so McClellan made these line changes. He's made the one change to the power play. What's he saying, Bruce?
Okay, his statement yesterday was, it's an issue right now. We can't rely on one line. We need a spark from unexpected sources.
It's funny to think
or
of
expected sources in unexpected places, yeah.
RNH and Eberle is on it. But it's, you know, and again, I just can't get my head around it.
Yeah.
I remember those players being dangerous on the ice and making plays.
Yeah,
I remember RNH getting separation from players and making a sweet pass over to somebody. And I just do not see that this year. So, yeah, a little bit of frustration there. Okay, so we asked Cult of Hockey readers on Twitter, if McClellan made one lineup move to improve performance, what is it? What should it be? And why should that move be made? And we asked for one because if we're not specific about that, we get like everyone makes about 50
suggestions.
Entire
new lineup with 6 trades.
It's like, oh God, it's very complicated then. So who do we got, Bruce? Who's up?
Okay, Defense Minister at the Scott Mack says, it is time to get more speed involved with the lineup. I think Hendricks and Lander stay out. Pakarinen and Puljujarvi go in.
So I like Pakarinen as a fourth line player just fine.
He's a plumber, but
I think Puljujarvi is where he belongs.
Yeah, they talked about that. McClellan actually was questioned about that yesterday after practice, and he said that they're tracking him, but they have no immediate plans to bring him back, and that only seems, once they made that decision, the right decision is to leave him down there for a while and let him get his timing and his confidence and whatever tangibles, intangibles you want to talk about. He's got to skate and he's got to play and he's got to succeed a little bit, and then maybe he'll be ready for another bash at the Bakes.
I don't want to see him back on the Oilers until McClellan's made up his mind that he's sticking with that player in a spot for like 2 months on the same wing.
You don't want to see him in the press box.
I do not
want
to see what happened before. I just think that was a mess. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't impressed with the coach's handling of that player. So until you're ready, I think Puljujarvi over Slepyshev on that Draisaitl Lucic line, the coach was willing to stick with that, I think that would be a good idea. But I don't think the coach is willing to stick with that. So until he is, keep him in the minors, give him lots of playing time.
Slepyshev's the more seasoned player of the two at the moment.
It's true.
He's waited his turn, and they might as well give him, and they are giving him a look. He's played every game for the last several weeks.
Yeah, and he's done okay. All right, from Megan at Maylee9. Just for fun, I want to see Nuge with McDavid. I think Nuge is quick and shoots. Might compliment 97. So by far, Bruce, by far, we heard this from a third of the people who answered this question.
Curtis.
They want to see, including the next, why don't you read what he said, Curtis Krause.
Curtis Krause, at Curtis Krause, agrees. Nuge with McDavid. Nuge can shoot and skate, and McDavid can pass and skate. And we've tried every other combo.
So what do you think? Nuge with McD?
Well, I wouldn't mind seeing it. Might as well see if it works. I've found Nuge is at his most effective when he's playing with high-end talent. Maybe he's a complimentary player. Maybe we're just reading all this wrong. And rather than being a line driver, he's a guy who can be the glue on a line and you know be the player that would click with McDavid. Anybody can get McDavid the puck in good position, you know, which is what Leon did a lot of. Right, was getting the puck to McDavid. And I think Nuge is capable of that. I don't personally don't see him as a winger. We've never seen him as a winger, but that doesn't mean he can't do it. I mean, Andrew Cogliano and Sam Gagne used to think they weren't wingers either. And
we heard that for years. Sam Gagne can't play wing. Sam Gagne is too small. He can't play wing. Well, he seems to be doing okay this year. I don't. Of course, he can play the wing. He played center. I mean, and he did well at center. Yeah, center is a much more difficult position. This idea, if anyone has this idea, Nuge can't play the wing, that makes no sense because he played center and he played it well. I mean, it's more physical at center. It takes more hockey sense to play center. So, yes, Nuge can play the wing. He can feed McDavid. Maybe he will make McDavid more of a shooter because Nuge can make a pass and he should have more time and space to make those passes with McDavid out there. So I think that combination could work. I'm okay with whatever you want to do with Nuge. I'm not – I don't like him on centering his own line, although this line I think that they're on, I'm willing to see if they can make it work. But I really think he needs to be with the driver. There's the evidence that Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is a driver is small. It's one period in 2014-15. When Pouliot, Eberle, and him were together for a couple months, and they did really well.
They were all doing well.
They were all doing well, and I would say Nuge was the driver of that line. Other than that, Nuge has always had his success playing with Taylor Hall, who was a driver.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've now seen for the last year and a half Nuge try to drive a line and fail. And the evidence is that he's not that player, at least not right now, may never be. So give the guy a break. Play him with McDavid or Draisaitl.
We'll see what happens. Either one. Like Nuge with Leon, I mean, they played with Hall on a line last year, and they absolutely tore it up. And, of course, part of that was Hall. But Nuge and Leon had real nice chemistry between them in that little spurt.
From Trevor Owen at 2 TS time, I would give Lander an actual chance to contribute offensively instead of sending him down, move him up in the lineup. Bruce?
What do you think, 3C maybe, above Letestu, and keep Draisaitl on the wing? Is that, I mean, that's how you could move him up. I don't see
you'd have to
him
play him with
possibly,
Draisaitl.
Or else you'd have to play him with...
Oh, I see.
You either stuff your top three centers in the top six, and then you go Lander, Letestu, or...
Who would, be on Lander's wing to make that work?
Well, it'd be, you know, we're still talking about bottom six for the most part,
I think we've kind of seen Lander as a fourth line winger is okay, and centerman taking some draws in the fourth line. He did do well with Taylor Hall on his wing. He played there 8 games, and he scored 7 points, Anton Lander did, and he earned his 2-year contract because of that.
Partly,
it was late in the year, 2014-15? And
then he went to the World Championships, and he did similar with on Sweden's first line with Philip Forsberg and Louis Eriksson, I think it was, and it's same kind of results.
I mean, if you had, for instance, a line like, if you were ever to put Draisaitl and McDavid back together, if Anton Lander was the third guy on that line, that might make sense.
Like, he's a glue player to me.
A glue player. Then you could just McDavid and Draisaitl would be freed up to just attack their hearts out, and you have this guy covering for them. That's an idea that might be worth exploring if you're going to move them up the lineup. So maybe if you had RNH and Draisaitl with Lander, or Eberle and Draisaitl with Lander, because I like the idea of McClellan has talked in the past of having pairs of players, but he's moved towards three players in recent months.
Well,
and I don't mind that idea. I like that idea of having two attackers and one guy who's the glue player cleaning up the mess.
In his first training camp, he actually did pair, McClellan's first training camp, he did pair Lander and Draisaitl. I remember writing a post right from training camp quoting the coach talking about how he wanted to pair those two guys up. And it didn't take. I think Yakupov was their other winger, and for whatever reason, the line was askew, and didn't really take off. But
he who shall not be named, Neil Yakupov. Poor Bailey Yakupov.
Well, it was McClellan was learning the team at that point, I think it's fair to say. And it's also fair to say that Lander didn't produce at the level that it looked like he might be getting to. But I agree with the reader here, Trevor, that it's all about opportunity. Lander has shown that when he's given an offensive role, that he can produce offense.
And he did
it in Oklahoma City and Bakersfield. He did it in that brief time in Edmonton. He did it in Sweden.
Against Chicago, I think Lander was arguably their best forward that night.
No, I liked his game.
You gave him a 6.
I did. That was a good mark for me on Saturday.
I might have given him a 7 because, I mean, he contributed to 4 scoring chances. He forced a couple of them. A couple of them were really good chances.
3 takeaways.
He actually looked like this guy's a player. And so when you say another team might pick him up on waivers, yeah, like Chicago,
yeah.
after watching that game, like, why not? Yeah. If you're looking for a really cheap guy in your fourth
line, that's
so
right.
I don't get the move, honestly, but I've said enough about it.
I think it's just placement of the chess piece to maximum advantage, and sometime in the future, maybe you'll see Jujhar Kara go down and Lander come back up, but at this point, he's got them poised where he can...
You know, Bruce, sometimes you have to sacrifice a bishop to win the game, and Pouliot's a bishop on this team, and
Pouliot.
I would send him to the minors.
I hear you.
All right. Who's next, Bruce?
Braden Lord. Immediately invest in the science for human cloning and take McDavid away for a field trip. That would be good. Imagine having a few McDavids.
Yeah, well, he's probably hard at work at that himself.
Think about unique talents. I mean, I think it has been done once. You know, there's that evil experimental duo out of Sweden. You might have heard of them that have been playing in Vancouver these last 15 or so years, where they did the human cloning thing, and that worked actually. It's like there's 3 players there. Like there's Heniel, there's Danrik, and then there's the 2 of them combined.
Dolly Sedin.
Their own, it's the chemistry between the two. It's like an extra factor. But yeah,
wasn't that sheep called Dolly, the cloned sheep?
Dolly the sheep.
There you go.
I'm happy to have the one McDavid, and we'll build around that.
Yeah.
Nice idea, though.
From Alan Hall, a blogger at Copper and Blue, keep Lucic and Eberle away from one another. Bruce, what you agree?
Well, you know, I heard those two talking about each other much earlier in the season and talking about how their games actually complemented each other. Lucic talked about how when he won the puck in the corner, he knew he could find Eberle in the good ice, and he just dumped the puck over there, and Eberle would, you know, with his hands and so on. He can cycle. He's just not a banger cycle type player, but there's more than one way to do the cycle. And Eberle was, you know, basically said the same thing in reverse. When Milan goes into the corner, I try and get open because I know he's going to dig the puck out somewhere where I can do it. So it all sounded great. Now, in reality, their production level together has been the pits.
Maybe put Lander with those two. No, seriously, like if Lucic is going to be deep and Eberle's going to be looking for the shot, you need someone to cover for them, right? RNH isn't the right guy to be Mr. Coverman.
He
like, you're wasting him. You're wasting him, I think. Is that
should,
in that
he
role?
He should be, but the threesome never clicked.
Yeah, he probably should be.
Never
but that,
clicked.
Oh, God, they were horrible.
Yep.
All right.
So, Kerry Kettle, at Kerry L. Kettle, says, Pouliot needs to be a healthy scratch. Too many flybys and low-effort plays from him.
Completely agree.
I knew that wasn't going to get much common disagreement from you based on our conversation.
What about you, Bruce? You've been quiet on the Pouliot front a little bit there. Are you more patient still? Are you?
Well... He's 3 years into a 5-year deal. This year he's basically stunk. The previous 2 years he was good, but both years he got hurt twice. So he never really, you know, put up the big number. Last year he scored at over 20 goal, over 50 point pace. If he'd have played 82 games at the pace, he was like 21, 33, 54.
I think he's always
always
been good on the attack. I'm going to suggest his defense has never been that strong.
Uh-huh.
He's never been a great back checker. He's never been that strong at his own end. So I see him as, at best, a good offense, mediocre to weak defense player, unless he's inspired, I guess.
When he's playing well, his forecheck.
But he did have good offensive play those 2 years. So
he's a good forechecker.
See, I couldn't resist. I had to get another little jab in there. All right, Henrik Sorensen at Not That's You says, move number 14 to another team or to the Condors. Hope he's not protected later this year. So he adds, he's failed so much this year, weak defensively. He's predictable. He seems to be coasting. So we got a number of anti-Eberle comments, Bruce. That faction is in full throat, full voice. The choir is singing doom to Eberle. Mm-hmm. And I might have even joined in the song, Bruce. I might have even suggested they shouldn't protect him.
I yelled at my TV one or two times, I'll have to admit. But at the same time, it makes me sad, you know, as a fan, as a long, long-term fan.
Yeah,
to see a guy come in here, most popular guy in town. They booed at the Taylor Hall draft when it was suggested that Peter Chiarelli would trade the Tyler Seguin draft pick for Hemsky and Eberle. And when they mentioned Eberle, the crowd at Rexall Place for the draft party actually booed. They loved Eberle. And they loved him for his first time here, and especially, you know, his second year when he filled the net and he got on a real hot roll. And he's been a consistent scorer right up until this year. But boy, has that tide ever turned. And it's like, it's not enough to say he's playing poorly, but it turns into these kind of little attacks on character that I find a little bit hard to take. As a fan of the team, I'm pulling for all the players. And sometimes I hear remarks which to me cross the line.
I feel, when you talk about that sadness, I feel it more for Nugent Hopkins.
Mm-hmm.
I'm have always been this huge Nuge fan and hoping mm-hmm. he would do well,
yep,
and
me too.
Loved his hockey smarts, his hockey IQ, and the tenacity that I've seen in his game.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know. Like this year, there's one play I keep seeing repeatedly, this weird play, defensive play, where someone is down low cycling the puck. And they'll be moving, they're cycling the puck in the Oilers' end, the opposition player, and they're moving actually back towards the Oilers' blue line, and Nuge is on them. But he gets too high on them, and they do a quick spin around back to the net, and he gets beat on that play. It's happened enough that I mm-hmm. started to make note, like, why do you keep doing that? Like, this happens to you all the time. Don't you realize that they're going to make that move? Can't you stop that? Aren't you a veteran center right now who should not be letting that happen? So, yeah, I guess my frustration is starting to outweigh my sadness on these right. matters, Bruce.
Well, I'm just hearing what the fans say, and I'm not talking about Henrik Sorensen. He said nothing that's out of line, but I have heard stuff that kind of I thought went too far. These eyes don't lie at Irish Eyes 41.
I think this is Sean Patrick Ryan.
Oh, yeah?
I think it is.
Irish Eyes 41.
I might be wrong, but it might
so
be.
So in response to the question of what move McClellan should make, he says, she says, I think he's just made it. Dry back to center with Lucic and Slepyshev.
Boom.
That line should have instant chemistry.
Bam.
Dry and Luch have had it before, small samples. Dry and Sleppy even less, but nice mix of shooter, banger, driver.
I think with this line combo that we might see, you know, two or three Espo slot shots from Draisaitl a game. Because he's got his Cashman and Hodge now, Bruce.
Uh-huh. Shooter, banger, driver. That sounds like a good party, eh?
Jeez. All right, you're going to get in big trouble for that.
What
All right.
Say? It's all in your mind.
Mitch Dull at Mitch Dull. Maybe Mitch Duell. What do you think? Mitch Duell?
I'd like to know, but maybe okay. I should DM him.
All right. Call up Puljujarvi and play him with McDavid. I think he can have the same effect as Leon does there, given proper ice time, not Todd jerking him around. Key to all this is to get Kajula and Sleppy playing well enough on Leon's wings. So, yeah. Puljujarvi and McD. They had some success earlier this year.
Yeah, they did. They actually did quite well in a fairly short period of time together. Puljujarvi got a few assists.
But
and they were
Bruce, they're not friends, man.
Yeah, well, maybe
you can't
that's
play them
it.
Together.
Maybe
they're not
that's
friends.
It. Maybe that's it. Maybe that's it. Todd jerking him around. Now, you remember, you want to talk about fan support. Remember last year, at the end of the year, when they closed down the old barn and they did the big walkout of everybody Cam Connor to Cam and Connor, and they went, who got the biggest cheer of anybody of anybody currently associated with the team, Todd McClellan. And yet, as the team, even though it's doing better, I keep hearing a faction that's not happy.
Well, you know what? I think with coaches, we weigh their success mm-hmm. against how they treat our favorite players.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
So I start to hold, you're not treating Ladder quite well enough. You know, you're missed like fourth line winger, right? Like as if it makes a whole heck of a lot of difference to the team. It does actually, but I really think it does. But
I get the request, and I'm sure you do too. How come you don't grade the coach? And it's always after a loss.
You know,
always.
He is such an outstanding coach, I think, in terms of man management, handling the team, handling the group. Everything he says after games is almost always bang on. I never get the sense that he's a blowhard or inexperienced or in over his head or
definitely
anything but in command and highly knowledgeable. And maybe his ideas don't always work. But, you know, his handling of the defense has almost been spot on perfect. The way they allot playing time, the way they make partners on defense, they hardly ever get that wrong. So, you know, that's huge. I think his handling of Talbot this year has been really strong. Not that there's been a whole lot of choice in that area.
Yeah. Well, he can be a little acerbic, and sometimes his comments are slightly on the harsh side. But, hey,
that's
a lot of
job.
Coaches. That's a lot of coaches.
These guys aren't just earning, like, two or three times what the average person makes these days, Bruce. Mm-hmm. Like they are earning.
Wow. It's a tough job.
It's a tough job, and they are well paid to do it. So, you know, I'm not weeping tears for the.
They're not above criticism.
Certainly, some criticism, some fair comment from the coach.
Certainly not.
Who's up?
Okay, Preston Hodgkinson at Preston Kicks FM. Going to be some blowback for this one, but sure. For sure, but I'm curious to see Pouliot on McDavid's wing for a game or two. Dave, blow back.
I've had the same thought now and then. I mean, it's not like it's an alien thought. They did play well together last year.
They were together for quite a while last year. With Yakupov early in the season, with Eberle late in the season.
And I would be in favor of it, but one of the previous people who said they've just noticed, Carey Kettle, flybys and lack of effort. I'm seeing the same thing. Like, honestly, I'm seeing a lack of effort from this player. Mm-hmm. And it's driving me crazy. So I just don't support it for that reason. I really think he did play with Draisaitl. He has had good line mates. It's time for him to go to the minors for a month and rethink the final 2 years of his stay with the Oilers if it's going to be that long.
Right.
Blowback. From Kurt Levens. Kurt Levens?
Who's that?
Who is he?
Oh, right. Oh, that guy, yeah.
Some crank. All right. Kurt is, of course, Cult of Hockey writer Kurt Levens, and said from... Now, do we know it's Levens or is it Levens?
I understand it's Levens.
I think it's Levens, too. I think I asked him, too. Yeah. All right. Said this from day one. Put your best... playmaker McDavid with your best natural scorer, Eberle, throw Draisaitl on left wing if trailing late. Pretty sensible, eh? That's why he's right.
That's what they've done right now, and you've got Maroon on that left wing, and if you want to put 29 on there, you can put him on left or right. It's an option that the McClellan would have at the moment.
I think there's a much better argument for Eberle on that line than Pouliot. Eberle had great success. He had more success than any other Oilers player last year playing with McDavid in terms of how many scoring chances those guys were creating. They really did well together. And I think part of Eberle's problem this year is expectation. People are thinking, you're playing with Connor McDavid. You spent all summer practicing your one-timer. So we were expecting him to one-timer the net repeatedly.
He's supposed to be Yari Curry this year.
I heard he
was practicing that one-timer for like several weeks last summer. I mean, obviously it should have instantly become lethal.
Yeah, get up out of the pool, get out of the pool, set down the drink, take a few shots on net.
I don't want to picture that. I'm just thinking, I mean, sometimes it's who the player is and what does he bring.
Maybe he's going to surprise us all and rip it up because he's got plenty of motivation. He does have great attacking skills. Now, we both noticed that he's no longer driving the net, attacking the net as hard as he did before his shoulder injury last year. He hasn't been the same player since then. So, but he had that really hot streak with McDavid after that. He was playing very well. So, every chance that he's going to have a really good run here for 2 months, and we're all going to shut up about him.
Many of us.
Yeah.
So Kevin Dunbar at Kevin Dunbar 11 says he likes the lines he rolled out today with, meaning yesterday, with Lander in for Hendricks. So Hendricks is kind of on the bottom of a lot of people's top 14 forwards, as in they'd rather see him not actually on the top 12. But you can substitute Lander out and say Pakarinen or Kara. That's the choices right now. And if either of those guys get a game, it'll likely be at the expense of Matt Hendricks.
Hendricks is good once every three games, and then he has two games where he's just too slow. So
yeah, he's more of a spot duty player really in my eye at this point.
Yeah.
Eric Friesen. A good character player and a good, you know, an extra set of eyes and an extra coach in practice and even in the press box. Like, I think he has value outside of his actual shifts.
I don't mind him as the 13th forward. I think he's kind of ideal, actually, this year. Not next year, but this year.
No, his contract's done, and so is he, would be my take.
Eric J. Friesen, I'd like to see Nuge with McDavid to get him going, or Benning on the power play. I think he could be a weapon there. So we've talked about the one thing. What about Benning on the power play? What do you think?
Well, he did get a crack there for a couple games when Sekera was out. And they put him on the second power play. And I think he got one official point, and he got another point just after a power play ended on the second unit. And looked like he knew what he was doing out there. Like, he's pretty smart with the puck.
I'd still rather see Davidson. We've never seen – he's got the best shot. How many times have I said this? He's got the best shot. Maybe the Klefbom's got a better shot. Davidson has a hell of a slap shot now.
He's got a hard shot.
And he's a smart player with the puck. I'd rather see Brandon Davidson on the power play than Benning.
He was good on the power play in junior, but that's a while back. As a pro, he seemed to have evolved into more of the PK side of the –
He's never really, special yeah, teams even mix, in so. Oklahoma City, he never really got that chance, Davidson, on the power play. He's not been seen that way, so maybe I'm just dead wrong.
So Kevin Maloney at Kevin_F_Maloney says, Nugent, Hopkins, Dreisaitl, Eberle together. If your second, third, and fourth best forwards put together can't score, it's time to plan for next year. So secondary scoring from those guys.
Ouch. Like, that was, there's some truth, man. There's your truth bomb
if
for
I'm
the day.
If I'm Milan Lucic reading that, I'm really going ouch.
If I'm an Oilers fan reading that, I'm going ouch. Like, 7-year contract. Nuge. Yeah. How many more years for Nuge now? What, four?
2021, four more years. Two more for Eberle.
Wow. At least Eberle's, like, these guys have got to play
and Drysdale expiring this summer, and we're going to have interesting times ahead there.
But yeah, he's right. Like, these guys have got to get it. But I don't think they're going to do it together. Mm-hmm. He's got Drysdale there.
He's got Drysdale with them. Okay, yeah.
All right. Well, that's not any line that Drysdale's on has a chance, and I that line works for me.
That might work.
Yeah, it might work. Works for me. Okay, Nick T at Tomcat 1771. Best move would be to not make a move at all. Motivate his players with different tactics other than line shakeup. So maybe keep RNH, Eberle, and Luch together and tell them, like, don't shoot it in, carry it in.
Right.
What do you think? Gonna work?
I think it was time for the blender, personally. Like, they had gone with those lines for a few games, and they came back from the break, and they didn't have it going on. They came back from the second break, and they didn't have it going on again. So it's not cast in stone, and it's good. They've got the experience together that they can go back. I mean, next time that Drysdale and McDavid play together, it's going to take them that long to click in terms of understanding their games. And that's going to also help them on the power play. But there's nothing saying that they have to be joined at the hip for the next 10 years. It's not like they're Getzlaff and Perry necessarily. And even those guys get switched sometimes.
Yeah, right? I like what Kurt Levens had to say there. Like, if you're behind, you need a goal late in the game.
Sure.
And you're maybe going down to three lines or two lines. That's when you put Drysdale and McDavid together.
Colorado used to do that with Sakic and Forsberg. And the only time you'd ever see him on the same line, but it would happen quite a bit, it would be in the third line of a game they were trailing. and then they would put them together and shorten the bench and try and get a power, you know, like a super group. And Pittsburgh sometimes does the same with Crosby and Malkin. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, if you got two centers.
Gretzky and Lemieux.
Well.
87 Canada Cup.
Yeah, yeah.
That tactic can succeed. Norse Ninja.
Okay, Norse Ninja 21 at Shinigeezer says, don't rush Nurse back. Preserve the long-term asset. May have wrung out everything from this group as it's constituted.
And the good news is, with this group of defensemen, there's no need to rush anybody back. Jordan Osterley stepped up and has just been playing fine hockey. He's looked like another Matt Benning out there, just this smaller player who really moves the puck well. And like, he's not as gritty as Matt Benning. He's not as good a defender, but he's a fantastic skater and he can really move the puck. So you got Davidson, you got Greiba, who's been a good seventh defenseman and hasn't embarrassed himself, generally speaking, and has had played some strong games as well. So, yeah, there's no reason to rush Darnell Nurse back.
And you got Chris Russell, of course, who's missed last game, but or last couple games. But there's seem to have six NHL-caliber defensemen most nights. And when Nurse comes back, if everyone else is healthy, then it's going to be tough decision time.
Speaking of Chris Russell, Malcolm Reynolds says, at Firefly out of gas, says, never, ever play Russell again. Never, ever play Russell again. Firmly believe he's worse than the majority of RD. Eye test and statistically. Plus, McClellan can't give him 20 minutes. So when Russell's been healthy, I believe he's been played more than any other Oilers defenseman at even strength. At even strength. So Malcolm Reynolds is not on the same page as the coach on this one. What about you, Bruce?
Well,
would you trade him at the deadline?
Well, it depends where the Oilers are at the deadline.
We know where they're going. They're going to be fighting for a playoff spot and in good position.
If all the other guys are healthy and some team makes an offer, I just don't see it happening this year. I think they're going to be adding at the deadline. And I don't see, you know, I keep reading Russell for a second round pick, and I'm going, well, who's going to give you that? And if someone else thinks he's worth a second round pick, why are you trading him?
I think he's worth a second round pick. I'd be tempted in some ways to do it if Nurse is healthy.
Right.
Nurse, Davidson, Sekera, Klefbom. The only question will be who's going to be on right D, and that's a big unanswered question. So for that reason, when you weigh everything, it's like maybe not, because I think statistically, the numbers that I care about, which is defending the slot, he's done as well as any of those other guys, and he's played on his wrong side. So you know he's been a very useful player, and when you're a playoff team, do you get rid of very useful players at the deadline?
Generally not.
Can be tempting, but I don't. I just think like that'd be crazy. I guess now that I think it through a little bit, tempting, but who's going to play right D? I guess you're going to move Sekera over there.
Maybe. I mean, Matt Benning is the big surprise, and I mean, I don't sign Russell long-term and put him in the way of Matt Benning's moving up the roster, and that's my concern about Benning with Russell, is what happens next. Well, what happens now is that over the course of the year, he's been in the top six of the team consistently, and he's been playing, like you say, top minutes, and the defensive results, you can argue with how they get achieved, but the Oilers don't give up a lot of goals on his shifts.
Here's another argument, Bruce, that I hate. It's like intellectual rubbish, okay? The argument is this. They should trade so-and-so for a second-round pick because the Oilers had to give up a second-round pick for Shirelli to come over to Edmonton. So they're missing their second-round pick this year.
It's true, they are, and they got screwed out of that pick.
But they're missing some asset.
It's got nothing to do.
You do not have to replace that. Like, there's no logic in saying, well, we must now get a second round. There's some magic around getting a second round pick. There's no magic. There's no link to that. They're completely unrelated. There's no, like, it just, Why do you say that? Like, who's thinking that? Does Chiarelli think that? Like, I must now get a second round pick because the team had to give up one to get me. So I am honor bound.
Right.
And there's this, like, don't, it, there's no relationship between those two things. You do what's best for the team. Mm-hmm. And if it's best for the team to trade Russell for a second round pick, make that trade. But don't do it because, well, we must fill in this hole, this gaping hole, which Chiarelli is honor bound to fill. Like, don't say that again, anyone, ever.
Well,
look not at, even you, Bruce.
Look at the
not
list.
Not right now.
Look at You're the long it, list you? Of Oilers second round, actual guys that they picked with second round picks. And tell me which one has been a huge difference maker for the Oilers. And I'm talking about the history of the team.
Well, some people were awfully fond of Martin Marincin, Bruce.
Yeah. Yeah. Jarrett Stahl, he was pretty good.
Marincin was a good player. He was an okay player. Stahl, look at, okay, so, and what is, okay, historically, what a second round picks, like what have they got? A one in five and one in 10 chance of being an okay-ish NHL player?
Well, Anton Lander, Tyler Pitlick, Curtis Hamilton, Martin Marincin, David Musil, Mitch Moraz. I mean, that's the list from 2009 to 12. You know, it's a crapshoot. And the Oilers' track record hasn't been all that great. I mean, Pitlick is the closest to those to really paying off. And it took 7 years, and we still don't know if the guy's ever going to be able to stand upright for a calendar year.
Indeed. So yeah, the second round, like, anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. If you want to have your depth, and having a depth of defense is important, because look at all these defensemen that are getting hurt. I mean, any given time. I mean, Russell himself is hurt now, but we've seen Nurse go down. We've seen Sekera miss some time.
Larson missed some time.
We saw Brandon Davidson miss a bunch of time.
Klefbom's. This is the first year he's been healthy. So, yeah, no.
You want to have at least eight.
You want to have eight guys you can trust in a playoff series. Because they should, I think the goal this year, like, you know, the goal's always, you got to wear, the goal is to win the Stanley Cup. Okay, the reasonable goal at this point, like the kind of the pie in the sky, if you can win a round of the playoffs, that would be gold. That's what you want to do. But to do that, you're probably going to need seven defensemen and maybe eight. So, because you're going to get in that next round and everyone's going to be beat up. So if you can then throw in Brandon Davidson, for instance, if he's been on the bench, like, that's gold for your team. Like, right. To have a player who can step in and function at a high level. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see that. And the last piece, if the one thing that McClellan could do, Bruce, what is it?
Jimmy Bonanza at McMeans 80. Says, I'd move Cassian to McDavid's line.
Well, I guess there are a few more. That wasn't
There's
the last.
Three more, yeah.
I got ahead
Cassian
of myself.
Cassian and McDavid, what do you think?
It's not hitting the spot there, Bruce. It's not like a sirloin steak done just right. It's kind of like a McDonald's cheeseburger. That's how appetizing that is.
Well, Cassian, you know,
I like Cassian more than some people, Bruce.
More than I do.
Yeah.
But he's a
You hold a grudge.
I do. He's a useful player. And he's got, he scores more at even strength, scores more points per 60 minutes than Jordan Eberle does.
This year.
Right wing. Yeah, this year. This year alone. But he's at 1.7, and he has historically been around that level before, which is pretty darn decent for a bottom six.
So that says more about
six.
Jordan Eberle this year than it does
it's
about
pretty
Zach.
Pretty darn decent for a bottom six. But in my experience watching him, anytime they move him up, he seems to be out of his level. He's better as on a grind line, a cycle line, and just taking it to him. And, you know, he fits nicely by Mark Letestu, and anytime they tried him with RNH or even the second line at one time. I haven't seen it as being a successful experiment, and obviously neither has Coach McClellan, because even now he's finally elevated him this week with Draisaitl moving off right wing. He's up to third line.
I don't see it either, and you're making a good point. I think if you give him a simple job, like, we want you to check back check really hard and cycle the puck really well. Mm-hmm. And that's
cream
it.
And cream guys.
Cream guys, that goes without saying with Cassian. Uh-huh. But that's it. Like, in terms of the hockey stuff, back check like a demon. In your own zone, make good decisions when you get the puck on the board. Puck protect there. Mm-hmm. Don't just throw it away into the middle of the ice, which is he's prone to do. And in the offensive end, cycle the puck. If that's all you're asking of Cassian, he's capable of doing that. Yeah. And I could see him on a third line doing that very well. Like if he had a classic kind of checking line, he could be a piece of that. So, but, oh God, if you ask him to attack and make nice plays with Connor McDavid, you're asking for a little bit too much. DK at DMKelly94. RNH McD on the power play together has to happen. So that was a different spin on the RNH McD theme that we've been hearing so much about. I was thinking about it, and in junior hockey, RNH spent a lot of time at the left point.
He played all over.
He played all over, but some of that was at the left point, and he's. It's an interesting thought to have him at the. It's like he's not on his off wing on the left side, but he's such a great passer, and he can really puck protect then when he has it there. So he's not. It's almost like you'd have this really strong setup guy on that side with the puck, and it's an interesting thought.
Well, in Red Deer, I saw him play a whole bunch of games in his draft year, and he was moving around on the power play, and he played the half wall on the right side, but he also played below the goal line on the right side. He played the guy in the center, you know, what they call the bumper.
Yeah.
And he also played left point. And wherever he went to, he was successful. He killed it on the power play in Red Deer. And in Edmonton, they've always seemed to use him on the half wall, and I think they gave him one little time at the bumper position.
Yeah, so they have Draisaitl just seems perfectly suited for the bumper position. McDavid's really good. He's got that right half wall staked out for the next decade, I hope, in Edmonton, at least. And so those two spots are taken. It would be worth trying him perhaps on the left half wall in that spot over there, Klefbom on the point and Lucic or Maroon down low. That would be interesting because he's such a great passer. And again, if you can set up Klefbom, Draisaitl, or McDavid with your passing, that's lots of options for RNH, and that might be. I'd like to see that. I agree.
The problem is that it's all lefties, and the modern theory is that you want to balance your righty lefty mix on the power play.
I usually adhere to that religiously.
Mark Letestu, because they don't have very many options on the left half wall. I'd like to see Anton Slepyshev. You know, that guy, when he played for Russia in the World Juniors, he owned that top of the left circle with the one-timer. And he was the captain of their team that second year. And his spot on the power play, I mean, he was the guy there. And I'm surprised that the Oilers haven't even given him a sniff. Like, you know, even second unit. Like, let's try him out for a couple of games.
Yeah, second unit. Like, who do they have there now? Who's over there? They have him on the other side usually.
What the sticks, what side they're shooting on.
Like, they got Pouliot over there, don't they? Like, who do they have?
They've got Kajula.
In this Eberle, bumper, Kajula's RNH, with a bumper.
And they've got, they switched the point men today, but they've been, Maroon has been he's been in the net front role. Lucic on the first unit, Maroon on the second one.
I'd have Maroon on the first unit over Lucic. Not a very popular thought, probably, with Milan Lucic. All right, so
now we're at the last one. Sheldon C. at Zaya Fan. Says, oh, his suggestion is novel. Shut off Twitter to irrational Oiler fans. But what would we talk about then, David? In fact, I'd probably be shut out of Twitter if they did that.
Well, I don't think he's telling. I think this is advice. Is this for him? Is this for the players? Players should never go on Twitter, and they should never read our blog. They should just stay right away from it completely. Why would you? Don't listen to talk radio. Don't listen to any of that stuff. It's way too negative. Like, just by its nature, it's too negative. Stay away, man. Like, do not go there. It's a crap show. So
I've heard that even there's this one blog that actually grades the player's performance from game to game. Can you imagine what would happen if the players read that stuff?
And I've heard that there's actually players who do read it and didn't like it very much, Bruce. Uh-oh. Especially you're such a hard marker.
Good thing we're outsiders here, eh?
Why would they care what we say? Well, like, seriously, like, why Why? I mean, because like what do we have?
Good advice that we have in there.
Maybe they think we can turn the crowd against the player. I'll tell you, I can't turn the crowd. I tried to keep the crowd from turning against Justin Schultz all those years. I had zero success, Bruce. So I, like, we do not have that kind of sway. People make up their own mind. So, like, they totally make up their own minds. We have no influence or limited influence, if any. So, like, anyway, players just don't read The Cult of Hockey. If that's what this guy's suggesting, because we would be classified as irrational other fans, I'm sure.
Well,
especially me.
Especially me.
So, and not to mention Kurt. God.
Well, if we're still fans after the last 10 years, you'd have to have a little irrationality built in somewhere in
a
the
little,
equation just to make it work.
It's part of being a fan. It's why we are fans, right? Yeah, you know, it's why do you care about this stuff?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, anyway, you can get into some cultural arguments that, like, this deeply ingrained part of Canadian heritage and culture that we're partaking in, and part of the, you know, the tribe of fans, generation after generation, connecting the generations, all that stuff. But it is, there's certain madness to it all. So already I think we're come to the end, Bruce.
Well, that's good. Next week I guess we'll have probably trade talks to talk about. We're a week, that'll be a week before the deadline.
Yes,
but we'll leave that.
Yes, and I see, you know, the idea that you put forward of Brian Boyle from Tampa Bay. I got his first name right this time. It's taken off, man. Yeah. You are an influencer.
I should have wrote the post, eh? I did write one on that guy back in 2014. I said, free agent of interest. And Tampa got him.
Just you saying it on this podcast, man, it got to the right set of ears, and action is now being taken. That's the kind of influence we have.
Maddie's on it now, so
yeah. You
know it's for real, right?
Oh, yeah. That's right. Well, it is for real, and Maddie's saying it.
He had an article in the Edmonton Journal.
Indeed.
Brian Boyle, and Pirelli did attend a Tampa game over the weekend, so it's not like...
connect the dots.
It's not like the scouting staff. Anyway, we'll have stuff like that, and maybe there'll be an actual trade between now and then. Who knows?
All right. Well, if you hung in there, thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks. I'm not going to say that you are also an irrational Oilers fan, but that's what I think. Okay. So in the meantime and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.
Talk to you next week.